All right, so my name is Elijah Stanley, and I'm here interviewing my grandpa, Glenn Stanley, and I have a couple of questions to ask him. My first question is, where were you born?
I was born in Western New York, about 40 miles southwest of Rochester, New York, in a town called Groveland Station.
Oh, okay. The where were your mom and dad from?
My dad was born actually very same place I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My mother was born in the town of Dansville, which was probably 20 miles away.
Oh, dang. Do you know how they met?
You know, I really don't. I do know my mother was with child, with my oldest sister, Arlene, when they got married. Back in those days, they called it a shotgun wedding.
Oh, yeah.
But so they, my dad and a couple of his friends I know used to go probably with their Model A Ford or something. They used to go up to Dansville and date girls up there. So,
oh, nice.
I don't know really. I don't know how long they went together before they got married.
Mm-hmm. How many siblings did you have? Do you have?
There were seven of us kids. Boys and girls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Arlene was the oldest. And then my brother, Junior, Roland, is he's just 1 year and 2 months younger than I, or older than I am. And then I was born in 1934. And then my sister, Shirley, 5 years went by, and my brother, Kenny, another 5 years. My sister, Cheryl, a year later, my sister, Karen. So that's seven of us.
Oh, wow. And you were the tallest of all of them, right?
Yeah.
They, how did you get along with your siblings growing up?
We got along good. We were all close, naturally. You know, there were spats, sibling fats.
Yeah.
Spats. My brother, Junior, and I were close. There were times when we'd get fighting each other. And it would last a whole day. We just had to stay away from each other. But we all loved each other. At the end of the day,
yeah,
you know, the war was over.
Did you guys pick on Uncle Kenny since he was the youngest boy at all, or no?
No, he was, you know, when I was, say, 10, he would have been 5.
Yeah.
And he was a little brother.
Oh, okay.
But no, he was, we thought he got babied because he was a baby of the family for 5 years.
Yeah. What was your childhood like growing up in New York back then?
I don't know how much information you need there, but, you know, it's born and raised on a farm.
Yeah.
And we love that. We love the animals. And back, born during the Depression, and as soon as you were old enough to do any kind of work whatsoever, that was part of your life, and it was part of anybody, you know, born and raised on a farm.
Yeah.
Was, the girls worked in the kitchen and in the house, and the boys worked outside and whatever he could do. My brother Junior and I milked every other morning, every other day, we milked one cow. We didn't have electricity in the barn then. We milked cows by hand.
Oh, wow.
And we had an easy milker that was on the end. And we had the farm, and then we used to, my granddad, Stanley, used to, on that farm where my dad was raised too. But he started a dairy called Stanley Home Dairy, and it was, every day they milked the cows, bottled the milk, and delivered the milk.
Wow.
To the houses. And that was before pasteurization law and before homogenization.
Mm-hmm.
And there, so I grew up doing that, and then when I was old enough, we'd ride in the milk truck with my dad and carry the bottles, the full ones from the truck to the house and back on there.
Oh, wow.
But it was good. We had the depression. We never hurt for food because we butchered our own beef. We butchered our own hogs.
Oh, yeah.
And we had chickens, had our own milk. Always had a big garden. And my mother canned all of our vegetables for the winter,
mm-hmm.
raised our own potatoes.
Dang.
So,
yeah. So you guys were pretty self-efficient.
We were. Ate good. Yeah. I never had my shoes. I could wear out a pair of shoes in maybe a month and a half.
Yeah.
And then we were at that farm for 5 years, and then we went, my dad leased a farm about 8 miles away, a bigger farm, and went to a one-room country school.
Oh, dang.
About a mile away. and we were there till I was 10 years old. And then my dad, it was World War II. World War II started actually when I was 6. So between the Depression, you know, growing up during the Depression, then World War II, a lot of the young men were drafted into the Army.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody worked. It was just part of life.
Mm-hmm.
But, so our childhood was good, up to a point.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know where we go with this, but, you know, then when I was 12 years old, my dad and mother separated.
Oh, okay.
My dad had fallen in love with another woman who had 5 boys. And
what's that?
And my brother Junior, my grandpa Stanley, worked for the state of New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was a stationary engineer at the powerhouse for a state institution that was right near the farm. And my brother Junior went and lived with them because grandpa needed the help. People said, well, why did he did that? I've told people before, I did it for 2 reasons, for my mother's sanity.
Yeah.
The two of us at that age, you know, always getting into something. And also, Junior and I, we'd have killed each other probably if he hadn't. We missed each other and still we got along very well.
Yeah.
But then, and then those years were probably frustrating years because my dad, I knew he was living with another woman and seeing those boys. And my dad and I are probably the closest of any of the kids.
Oh, okay.
I worked with him, you know, in the milk truck all the time and whatnot. But still, we had always knew we had the love of our mother and my grandparents and my dad, for that matter. But it was a big void in her life. Probably the hardest part of my life was doing that.
So your grandparents were around quite a bit when you were growing up?
Well, they were on the farm, and I was there every chance I had, you know. We were there on Thanksgiving and Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Grandparents That's on the farm. Awesome. That was my dad's parents.
Yeah.
And then my grandfather, Nice, on my mother's side, he died probably when I was a baby. And so I didn't know him. But then my grandmother, Nice, she was a wonderful, kind, sweet lady.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited her in Danesville. We used to visit her quite often during the Depression and during World War II. I mean, people lived in town. A lot of them didn't have a whole lot of food. But
yeah.
We raised beans like chili beans are made mm-hmm. of and whatnot. And I remember going up, we'd take a whole sack, 70-pound sack of beans and other canned goods and things like that. We'd take up there for her and for my mother's younger brother and sisters that were still at the house. But they were close, and they were a big part of all of our lives.
Oh, nice. What is your best childhood memory, or do you have a favorite?
I think any time before I was 10 o'clock, or under 10 years old. Just a good life on the farm.
Yeah.
Threshing. You know, all the other farmers get together, the teams of horses, and they go from one farm to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. It was always mom and dad to have other couples up, maybe on a Friday evening or something like that. And there were good times then. And, of course, Christmas time at Grandpa and Grandma's like any kid.
Yeah.
You know, and Thanksgiving, it were special days. Yeah.
Did you have any cousins or around in New York, or were they kind of far away?
Well, they were city boys. And
oh, yeah.
in Buffalo, New York, and they were about the same age. My Aunt Hazel, my mother's sister, closest to her, and they would come out there on the farm, and we thought they were the most ignorant. They didn't know one cow from another, and they didn't know how to use a pitchfork or a shovel. But they used to come out occasionally, and then a couple other cousins come up from Rochester and visit occasionally.
Oh, nice. Do you have a favorite of those relatives, or
of his aunts and uncles, mother's brothers and sisters,
or your grandparents?
Well, yeah, my favorite growing up was my grandfather Stanley.
Oh, okay.
Fred Stanley and my grandmother Ethel, and then my great grandmother Martha Dwyer. She had her own farm after, I think, her first husband died, my great grandpa, and she married again and he died.
Oh, okay.
And she had the farm. She had a little farm down near Victor, New York, and she stayed there. She had chickens, and she had an old man rented part of the house, and they raised different crops, raised hogs, sold milk and whatnot on there.
Oh, nice.
So, and then I think it was right about 1944, she also came and lived with Grandpa and Grandma Stanley on the farm.
Oh, okay.
So it was just nice older grandparents. They were very enjoyable.
Do you know, which one had the biggest influence on you growing up?
Or probably my grandfather, Stanley. Yeah.
When you were younger, what did you dream of becoming? Like, what did you think you'd grow up to be?
You know, I probably used to dream of having my own farm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it was, I liked the farm. The farm that we had, there was 212 acres. And up behind that acreage ran up over some rolling hills and to a river in the back. And there would be woods along there. And it's what now part of Letchworth State Park. But it was just, I liked the woods. I liked the wilderness. And it was heaven to me to be, have that. That was my world.
Yeah.
But so that was probably when I was younger, that was probably my dream of being a farmer.
A farmer?
Having a farm of my own. Yeah.
That would be awesome, especially back there when it's so green.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was your, so your first job, was it the working for the dairy on your farm, or?
Yes, of course, at home.
Yeah,
really.
But that was just
working, and then when we got off the farm, I was always looking for work. I used to, in the fall, I'd go and rake leaves at different places, go knock on the door, and rake leaves. And then when my mom and dad separated, mom and myself and the four, Kenny and the four sisters moved up in the country to a place. This lady owned the farm. The farm was leased out, but she let us live in that house just to have somebody there. And we papered it. My mother and sisters were always wallpapering and wallpapered it and painted it. But then I worked at the guy who was leasing the farm. I worked there. I would have been 12, 13 years old, I guess. And I worked there for every evening, milking cows.
Oh, yeah.
All summer long. And I worked for our milk and our eggs and a firewood, because all we had was a wood stove.
Oh, okay.
So I worked there, and then later we moved from there into town, and then I worked at a bowling alley in this little town.
Oh, wow.
At night they used to set pins, used to be back there and
before
set.
Before they had the machines.
Yeah, we'd set two alleys, and I'd sit there several times, usually start about 6 in the evening until 11 or so.
Oh, dang.
Did that a lot, and then my first summer when I was 16, had my little 34 Chevy.
Oh, yeah.
Then I worked for another farmer that I knew. And we used to work, it was 10 hours a day, 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Oh, geez. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then how old were you when you ended up joining the Air Force? Was that with Uncle Junior?
Yeah. I was 16 when I signed up. I had to wait till 17.
Oh, yeah.
To go in. So I turned on 17 on December 4th, 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And then January 7th, 1952, about a little over a month later, we went in, started basic training. And then
you guys, did you end up getting shipped out together, or did you?
We were promised when we went to the recruiter, you know, they said we'd be able, they called a buddy system.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be able to stay together for 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, we went to the boot camp at Sampson Air Force Base there in New York on the north end of one of the Finger Lakes there. Boot camp was about 10 weeks long. But at the end of 10 weeks, I got shipped to Denver, Colorado, Larry Air Force Base for armament school.
Uh-huh.
And my brother Junior got sent to New Jersey for mechanic school.
Oh, okay.
Auto mechanic school.
Yeah.
And then after we went to school for like probably 6 months. Then after that, we were together for about 2 weeks. And I had orders to ship out to the Far East. We didn't know for sure. Nobody, they never told you, just somewhere in the Far East.
Oh, they didn't tell you where?
No, not till we got on the ship. On August 7th, 1952, we got on the ship headed for the Far East. And then when we got there, we got orders on the boat.
Oh, okay.
And I assumed, because I had gone to armament and munitions school, I assumed that I'd go to Korea.
Yeah.
And all the guys in my class stayed on the boat going to Korea. I was the only one that stayed in Japan.
Oh, really?
And it was good. Well, I had to. I didn't realize it, but when I checked in at my base, I asked the first sergeant if he could tell me why all my friends went on to Korea, and I was sent there. And he looked and he says, "Yeah, son, you got to be 18 to be in a combat zone."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Well, sir, I'll be 18 in 3 months, and I want to put in for a transfer now." He says, "What? You'd rather go to Korea than be here?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And but the base that I was on, it was called the Far East Air Materiel Command. And I had all the aircraft, a lot of the World War II aircraft, came there for all the major inspections and repairs. So I knew the armament system on every aircraft that was ever in World War II.
Oh, wow.
And the ones that were used in Korea. And I was had to have been a Japanese factory probably before the war. But in this department that I was in, there was 15 Japanese guys, and I was the only one, 17-year-old American GI. And at that time, the Japanese were still under our control.
Yeah.
But I got to know those guys really good. They became good friends. One of the head guys, Japanese guys, Kishimoto Toyoichi, was a World War II pilot in Manchuria during the war. Another one, Shibazaki Hideo, was a Japanese Zero pilot.
Oh, wow.
He was shot down 3 times and shot down 2 of our planes.
Oh, dang.
But he said the Japanese Zero was not a good airplane. He said you'd be flying and oil would get all over the windshield, you couldn't see. And then he volunteered for his kamikaze pilot.
Oh, wow.
They volunteered for that. Then they were special treatment. And he said the war ended before he had to go on his mission.
Oh, yeah.
And he grinned and said, I'm very glad.
Yeah, I bet.
But anyway, I learned quite a bit of Japanese and became good friends with him. So I was there 8 months, and then I finally got my transfer to Korea.
Oh, nice. Was it pretty crazy when you got to Korea?
Well, I was stationed in Korea. They call it K-sites, K-1, K-2, mm-hmm. up through K-14, starts at the southern end tip of South Korea. And I went to K-14. It was the only Air Force base bombed during the Korean War because it was very close to the 38th parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't heavy bombing raids. Most of it was little aircraft, they called them Bedcheck Charlie,
mm-hmm.
would come in under the radar and drop 60 or 100-pound bombs. I think it was a more psychological warfare than anything.
Yeah,
I didn't have anything to worry about. I didn't have a girlfriend or a wife or,
yeah.
or kids, but some of the guys, there was 8 men to a tent, and some of them, it was just, they were terrified.
Oh, I bet.
But it was, we worked hard, long days, nights, guard duty, mm-hmm. way out in the middle of nowhere. But you felt like you were doing something to help mankind, you know. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And then Uncle Junior, did he end up going to Korea?
He went to Greenland.
Oh, okay.
There was a secret base they were building up there, up in Greenland, that was top secret, but extreme conditions up there.
Yeah, I bet.
But I mean, yeah, he was there, I think he was there about 8 months, 8 or 9 months on there. So.
And then you guys, and then that's what brought you, being in the Air Force is what brought you to the West Coast, right?
Yeah. I come back from Korea on a boat again, a ship,
mm-hmm.
And I come back, I come on under the Golden Gate Bridge on my 19th birthday.
Oh, wow.
December 4th, 1953. Yeah. But anyway, in Korea, when you were going to transfer, your time was up, there'd be a bullet on the bulletin board. First of all, you had a questionnaire before that. When you go back to the States, what area would you like to go to? And you had northeast over the southeast, north midwest over the south midwest, northwest over the southwest. Well, being from New York State, my choice, of course, was the northeast,
yeah,
closer to home. So I looked on the bulletin board, and there was, Air Force Base in Hayward, California. California, I hated California. In August 7th, when I left in the base that you prepare to go overseas, it was like 100-some degrees.
Oh, wow.
Dry, everything was bone dry. Oh. And I thought, man, compared to that lush, green New York State, you know.
Yeah.
But I ended up being there, the reason they sent me here was to go to school, go to instructor school, and learn how to be a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Last thing in the world I wanted, I hated. I wanted to work on aircraft on the flight line, you know, in there. But then that's the reason. And then I learned how to teach, was sent to Beale Air Force Base. The Air Force decided it was going to have its own infantry, and we trained airmen from all over, would come there for 6 weeks training. And I was an instructor in machine guns and all artillery fire and that type of thing in there. And Beth's brother, my wife's brother, was one of the instructors there. And we talked about farming, and he was married at the time and with his wife living on base. But three of us roomed together, partied together.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them had been in Korea, same base I was at. But we'd gone to that instructor school together and then worked there together. And my brother-in-law heard me say, I'd sure like to meet some nice girls. And he heard us and said he's from 50 miles north of there, and his sister was a senior at little town of Durham. And he'd see if he could set us up with blind dates. So said the three of us with blind dates, and all three of us married are blind dates.
Wow.
I've been married almost 62 and a half years. The other two have passed within the last year and a half. But they were married that long, too. So that's how I ended up out here. And a couple months after I met Beth, and I was transferred to another base.
Oh, yeah? What base did you end up getting transferred to?
I ended up going to called Chanute Air Force Base, Illinois.
Oh.
And first of all, back to Denver, Colorado, to a more sophisticated instructor school.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the home base, Chanute Air Force Base, and the name of our group was Professors on the Run.
Oh.
And if any new aircraft come out, either they sent us to the factory, and we learned about the systems that we worked in,
mm-hmm.
the hydraulics, electrical, the armament, and so on. Or the factory people would come and train us. But then we went from base to base as a group training the airmen. And so I went, my first assignment was going after the school in Denver was to go to Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And then the aircraft was the F-100. Completely different armament system than the F-86s that I worked on in mm-hmm. Korea.
That's crazy. And you kept in touch with Grandma the whole time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Regular, yeah. See, before, we started going together, and it seemed we had so much in common. Our parents seemed to have a lot in common. And we never mentioned married, but for some reason, we started looking at wedding rings, and we looked one at the base. They called it the base exchange. That was cheaper because you didn't have any federal excise tax.
Oh, yeah.
But so anyway, when I saved up enough money, and payday, I hurried down there, and the rings were there. And it was between classes. I had several classes on the firing range in the morning. We had lunch, and at 1 o'clock, I had another class. So I had to hurry. Beth was down there staying with her sister-in-law. And I walked in there, and I said, I got it. And I put the ring on her finger, and her sister-in-law said, well, aren't you going to ask her to marry you? Oh, yeah, will you marry me? Real romantic.
Yeah.
And I said, hurry up, make me a peanut butter sandwich. I got to get back to the base.
Oh, wow. So you asked her to marry you right before you got shipped to Illinois?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And then that would have been in 1954. And then I got to leave in May of 1955 and hitchhike on an airplane, Air Force plane. Got a flight to L.A. and then I got on a Greyhound bus, come up here and got married. And then we went back on a Greyhound bus.
Oh, wow.
And lived back there. So that was in May of 1955.
Did you, what year did you end up having your first daughter?
1956.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd you find out?
Well, we'd only been married about 2 months, and your grandma kept telling me you wanted to have a baby.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't ready. I want to wait, get out, find out. I'm going to live in California, get a job, find what I'm going to do. And she kept after me. Finally convinced me we should have a baby. So we did, and she got pregnant 2 months after we were married. And then in April of 1956, Debbie was born.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's crazy. And then you ended up having another daughter and then two twin boys?
Yep, 1959. 56, 59, yeah. 2.5 years later, a little over 2 years, Judy was born, our second girl. When we had Debbie, I thought, I can't have another child. I love that girl so much, I don't have enough room for love for another
mm-hmm.
one. Judy came, and I had just as much love for her as I did for Debbie.
Oh.
And I was perfectly satisfied with two girls. That's enough. But Beth always said she wanted four.
Uh-huh.
And We're pregnant again, and then January 18th, 1962. And then we found out just a month before that she was pregnant with twins.
Oh, wow.
In those days, you had no right. They didn't know until then. They didn't do sonograms.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not know what the gender was until they were born.
Yeah. Under. How'd you feel when you found out you had two boys?
Great. I was excited when I found out we're having twins.
Yeah.
And I really did not care whether they were both girls or both. I was hoping to have a boy or mm-hmm. two boys. And then a year after I got out of the service, that first year I worked as a union laborer.
Mm-hmm.
Worked at a gas station in a union laborer. And then best brother Don convinced me to go to college. And I can't go to college. I quit school. When I quit school to join the Air Force, I was a junior. When I got to Japan, they made it mandatory that you take the GED test. So I took it and passed it the first time.
Oh, nice.
With ease. And so I took the college entrance class and passed it and started college on the GI Bill. And then to subsidize my income, I cleaned auto upholstery for car dealers.
Oh, yeah.
But I was in my senior year, and on January 18th, the day the twins were born, I had three finals that day.
Oh, geez.
So I'd been with Beth all night. She'd been in the hospital all night. And then she went into delivery. And by then, they sent you out to the way out in the other end of the hospital. And then the doctor come out, said, your wife and babies are doing fine. And I said, what were they? You don't think I'm going to tell you. Go ask your wife. So I went in, and they weighed 7 pounds apiece.
Oh, geez.
So I went in, and she said, they're boys. They're both boys. Oh, identical.
Yeah.
So it was very enjoyable.
I bet. Did you, how has being a parent changed you as a person? Can you really remember a time not being a parent now? That has been.
I think, you know, having. To me, I would consider that I had a good family life.
Yeah.
Even though my mom and dad had separated. By the way, when I was in the Air Force the last year, they went back together and stayed back together. And,
oh, your until they mom passed. And dad?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, but I think family was always. Grew up with that idea that mm-hmm. eventually I would get married and have children.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And I enjoyed being a parent. And I remembered when I was going to college in an English class, it dawned on me shortly after Debbie was born. You got room?
Oh, a second. What the heck? I don't know. Alright, I just have to do it. It just reset, so I'm going to introduce us again and then just start back where we were.
Okay.
Because it saved the all the rest, but yeah. They said the microphone quit working.
Oh, okay.
All right.